Welcome to Becoming Church, the podcast where we discuss how the message and movement of Jesus is not just about becoming Christians, but about becoming the church. I'm your host, Kristen Mockler-Young, and if you love this podcast for our nuanced conversations and the way we hold space for the unknowing, you will love this conversation with Kristen LaValle. All right, Kristen, welcome to Becoming Church. So glad to have you with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
I found a line on your website, which I think I'm obsessed with. And this is where we're actually going to start. This is the perfect place to start.
Okay.
I'm going to read it for anybody that doesn't know. Here's what it says. It says, it made me laugh so much. It said, Kristen would like it known that some of those words were written before her frontal lobe was fully closed. And she has grown and changed many times since then. Talking about your previous writings. So she wouldn't write these posts the same way today, but she's thankful for the good things and amazing people they brought into her life.
Yep.
Can you think of any specific examples? Was there anything in particular that you were thinking of that you were like, oh, I would have written that differently now than I did then?
Oh my gosh, everything.
Okay.
I started writing online when I was 23, 24, and wrote with all the confidence that you have at 23,
yes.
24. And I was just really, I was sincere, but I was arrogant. And there were things that I said specifically about like being a stay-at-home mom and how to connect with your husband. I had a post go really viral called Let Your Husband Love You. And it's actually the post that kind of like set off my writing career because it went so viral and it was posted on all of these websites and there was news organizations talking about it. And it was this really simplistic, like, oh, well, it doesn't matter that you're tired and touched out by the time your husband comes home from work. You need to just let him love you. And I was so sincere and just trying to find a way to be content in my life as a stay-at-home mom, which was really, really challenging. Uh-huh. My kids were little. And now I look back and I'm like, ooh, girl, it's not that simple. I think I don't know. I don't want to be too disparaging to it because it was sincere and it was, you know, that's where I was at the time. And I think it helped a lot of people at the time. But now I think I try to write with a little bit more nuance, a little more compassion. It's not so black and white anymore. But, you know, we love the girl that I was, but grateful that I'm not that girl anymore.
Yeah. Listen, I, as somebody who, not just with like marriage and kids, I mean, we all think we're going to be the perfect mom when we don't have any children of our own, right? Like we know how to be the perfect wife before we get married.
Yep.
I would say the same with my faith. Like, I think we're similar in this. I grew up in the church. And so I was like, well, I know what the Bible says and I know what God thinks and I know all the things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I absolutely can look back. Luckily for me, mine have not been published anywhere, but I can look back at even journals and I'm like, do I just throw these out so my kids don't find these one day?
And like, you got to like heavily redact them.
Yes. I'm just going to take a big fat black Sharpie and just go through multiple sections.
Yep.
Is there anything, I mean, grace for all the grace for growing and learning, right? But do you think there was anything in particular that changed when it came to your perspective or the way that you decided to write?
It just life just humbled me and you think you know a lot and then you realize you don't know anything at all. And that, I think that's a grace that God gives us. He gives us the opportunity to either double down or grow. And thankfully I grew and changed and humbled and changed the way that I approach my life and changed the way that I write about my life and talk about it with other people.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard it put in those terms where seemingly the opposite, right, is you grow or you double down.
Yeah.
But hearing you say it just now, I'm like, oh, those really are, that really is kind of, you either choose to grow in your not knowing, in your uncertainty and being okay with understanding like the mystery of all of the things, or you really do double down in pride and certainty and
yeah.
I don't know. There's probably a lot of words I should say that could say there that I shouldn't.
It's true though. You double down and you determine to stick your feet in the mud and stay where you are. And you can't grow if you're staying where you are. If you're so determined that where you are is the place you're supposed to be, how are you ever going to grow past that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I guess same for knowledge. Like if we already know everything, yeah, how are we ever supposed to know more about God or learn more?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, you and your husband, Zach, have a background mm-hmm. in ministry, right?
Yeah.
And sure I believe do. There was a little bit of hurt there. And so I want to hold mm-hmm. space for that, for whatever it is that you want to sure. share with us. But can you share a little bit of your and Zach's experience?
Yeah. So we met in Bible college and I kind of grew up in a ministerial family. So that was all that I knew. And Zach became a Christian in high school and he was the first one in his family. So we were both really young. We were 19 and we started youth pastoring together at 19 and did that wow. for the next, yeah, long time. And we did that for 11 or so years together. And we had some really great and beautiful experiences. And we had some kind of like neutral ones. And then we had one that was really painful. Mm-hmm. And that one ended in just the pastor and the board pushing us out. We chose to leave, but they pushed us out in a yeah. really harmful and abusive way. It was so unnecessary to do way that they did. Thank you. And it caused a lot of harm. And it sort of sent us on this unraveling for the next couple of years because ministry was so in our DNA. And that was the only career that we'd ever had. That's the degrees that we had to yeah. work in. And we felt like we had started feeling before everything happened that God was pulling us in a different direction. But then we were pushed out. Now we have to figure out, where are we going to live? Because we were living in the church house. Where are we going to work? Gosh. We don't have careers that translate into the workplace. Who are we?
Right.
You know, it was this like total shattering of everything. It was not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's something that people who, and maybe you can shed a little more light on this, people that are not in ministry, right? Really, truly can't understand how, like when you end up leaving your ministry, you leave your job. It's so different mm-hmm. than maybe leaving like an office job where sure there's yeah. going to be relationships that are missed and there's mm-hmm. going to be some grief there. But when you leave a ministry job, you're effectively leaving your community, your support mm-hmm. system. I mean, not just your income, but like your family, your identity. It's what did you yeah. guys do after that?
We wandered. We lived with family. We went and stayed with my grandmother for 6 weeks. She was in Georgia. We're in Massachusetts. We had three small kids, so gosh. It was a lot of panic. We ended up in the South Bronx near Yankee Stadium because my parents had been living there, and then they moved, and they were like, you can come finish out our lease. So we lived with them for a couple weeks, and then we lived in the apartment alone for a couple months, and we just sort of scrambled trying to mm-hmm. figure out how we're going to build a life outside of this career and outside of this community. We didn't want to leave. We didn't want to move. So we worked yeah. really hard to move back to our city and find a place to live. And then that ended up being a whole other drama. But yeah, it was just a lot of like figuring things out. And we always say we just threw a fortress over our family and became really inclusive with just, it was just five of us at the time because we needed to heal and we needed yeah. all the other voices out. We needed to just, who are we and how are we going to move forward from this? What do we believe? What are we doing in the future? We were 30 years old and our lives were just turned upside down. So it was really chaotic for a while.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, when they have this kind of experience or a similar experience, I don't know if I should say a lot of people, some people mm-hmm. end up having this take them away from God, at least for a season, right? Like maybe yeah. the church, God, and we will get into your book here in a little bit. Was that anything that you and Zach ever, I don't know if it's a common experience. I know it happens, not yeah. to everyone. Is that something, did you guys ever go through a season, even a day mm-hmm. of like, maybe this whole God thing is not for us because of your experience in that church?
Yeah, it was more so me than my husband. He had gone through that years earlier with a different situation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it completely broke my faith. And I got to a point where I believed that God was real. I wasn't sure if he was good. And I was okay. really angry. Yeah. And I write a little bit in the book about how I had to engage with that pain and engage with that the feelings of abandonment, feeling like God had betrayed me, feeling like my entire faith framework had failed me because it was so in my DNA, being in full-time ministry, the structure of church that I was in, it had shaped so much of my identity that when I left that, my identity broke. And when your identity is fractured, the image of God is fractured in you. So you don't know who God is because you don't see him reflected in you. You thought he was somebody else and now he's this. And it was just this really, it was a spiral of fear and hurt, anger, and I had to process that in therapy, but also in my personal life of sorting out, what am I really angry at? Am I angry at what these people did, or am I angry at God for rejecting me? And I felt like he had lied to me. So yeah, definitely broke my faith at the time in the worst ways. Now looking back, I could see that it was the best thing that could have happened to my faith.
Yeah. Well, looking back, since you said that, where can you look back and see God's goodness in that, in the whole season?
Oh my gosh. Well, at the time, like I said, I thought that God had rejected and abandoned and betrayed me. And now I see, now when I look back, I see that he was rescuing us. And we were in this life and in this pattern that we were already feeling pulled away from, this expression of church and this ministry life. We were already feeling like, maybe God is doing something else. Maybe we don't really believe in the structure of church. Maybe we don't really believe in career ministry. We weren't really sure. We just had all these feelings and we didn't have anybody to look up to that was already doing that. We weren't reading books. We weren't reading podcasts. We were in this really bubble, a small bubble of a denomination in our world, and our understanding of the world and our understanding of faith was really, really small, really, really limited. Mm-hmm. And that was all that we knew. And so when we started feeling that, we were like, ooh, are we sinning? Is this wrong? Are we losing our faith? Like, we had no context or frame of reference for it. And then this church thing happened that was deeply painful. But now looking back, I can see that this was a good thing that God was doing. He was actually moving us out into something else, into a life that we should have been, that he intended for us to be in. And his goodness at the time didn't feel very good, but now I can't imagine still being in that world and still doing what we were doing. And his goodness was all over every step of the way. I can see, looking back, I can see where his hand was moving and he was lining things up and he was organizing things and he was protecting things and he was putting people in our lives. But at the time it just felt really, really like in a vacuum, like isolated in this vacuum, and you can't really feel anything. But looking back, you can see, oh, okay, I can see what God was doing now that the sun is up. I can see what he was doing, but didn't feel like it then.
Yeah. Do you think, and I know now you have four kids?
Five kids.
Yeah. So now thinking as a parent and raising your kids in the faith, and maybe this is a question with no answer, and I didn't prep you for this at all. So it's okay if there is no answer, but I wonder do you think there was anything that could have prevented you and Zach from going through what you guys went through? I know that it had to happen in order for God to get you to the place that he needed you to be, right? Mm-hmm. But do you think there was anything like, if only this had happened, we wouldn't have found ourselves here? Or does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's probably a church culture question and a church system question. The system of authority that was in place in our denomination and in a lot of churches didn't really make room for honest conversations that don't end in something neutral. They end in either like, you know, this bad thing or this good thing. And it's this sort of like an extremism of faith and of function in the church, what you think the church is supposed to look like, what you think pastors are supposed to do, senior pastors, youth pastors, worship at, whatever they are. Yeah. And I think if our church specifically, and maybe the church as a whole, had been a little bit more relational in their dealings with things, it would have been hurtful, but not as painful as it was. Because there's ways to say, okay, this isn't working anymore, and go your separate ways without causing trauma to another person. So what, I think definitely, I think definitely there are ways to handle things better, but I also think it's a bigger conversation of what are we actually doing in the structure of our churches and in the authority tiers? What are we doing with power? How are we handling things in a Christ-like way? Much bigger conversations, but specifically, I think there's ways to do that without traumatizing someone.
And hopefully, I know there's a lot of people lending their voice to calling the church up and calling the church to change and to be better. That's one of the things this podcast aims to do. I know that you're doing that in your work too. And so hopefully for your kids, for my kids, you know, for the future generations, they will be able to grow up in a church system that, while it's not perfect, functions a lot more Christ-like than maybe the ones that a lot of us grew up in the 80s and 90s,
I believe that 100%. I see it happening all the time. And like, man, this next generation that's going to be leading these churches and planting churches and being the authority figures, if you will, in these churches are going to be so much more compassionate and empathetic and trauma informed. And maybe this will just be a thing that we talk about as something that used to happen. It doesn't happen anymore. And our kids will be like, oh, I can't believe you guys were like that.
Back in the olden days, church sucked. Yes, hopefully that would be amazing, right? What a prayer that would be. Man.
Yeah, I believe it. It's happening.
Me too. Well, now you spend your time helping other people who are also wrestling with, you know, church as an institution. And so what encouragement would you give to someone who's listening, who maybe feels torn between wanting to leave a bad experience, but still pulling a pull toward God or faith, or maybe even something that they can't name?
I don't think those things have to be mutually exclusive. The world is big, and there are thousands, maybe millions of ways that our faith and the Bride of Christ is expressed across cultures, across continents. We have this really small, I think, Western, maybe even Americanized way of thinking about our faith and the way that the church is supposed to operate. But the church is an organism. It's not this organization. Yeah. It's living, it's breathing, it's people, it's messy, it's chaotic, it's beautiful. It's all these like really human things. Yeah. And I think when we think that our faith has to fit inside the structure is when we get held up. And the most true thing I can say to anyone who's struggling with that tension, and I know that tension so well because it can feel like if I leave this system, if I leave this church, if I leave this denomination, my faith is going to fall apart. And we tie up our faith and our frameworks of belief into the system that we're in. But the truth is that you are so safe with God no matter where you are and no matter what's going on. We have this really strange fear of the slippery slope, which I don't believe in the slippery slope. If there is one, we're all on it and we could all fall down it at any point. And I think we think that we are just one question or one curiosity away from losing our faith entirely. And I don't think that's true. The thing that is true is that there is a social expectation for you. And when you start exploring or being honest with what you're struggling with, you can lose those relationships that are tied up in having this set of beliefs or this set of expression of church. And that's probably going to happen. And you just have to understand that it's probably inevitable that you're going to lose some people, but it's not going to be the end of the world. And you will find people who will see you and love you and care for you, regardless of what stage of faith or where you're at in your relationship to structured, organized church. And those people are still the Bride of Christ, and they're still going to love you, and they're still going to be your community. But the biggest thing is to know that you are safe, and God is not going to reject you or abandon you because you're in a weird place holding a lot of tensions in both of your hands.
Right. Well, like you said earlier, you know, it really comes down to our identity. And when we've put our identity, and this is speaking as a church girl who grew up in the church and was the good church girl my whole entire life, even then, like, I've never walked away from God or the church, but my identity in Him still had to have a dramatic shift away from, you know, my identity is as a Christian to follow all these rules and to perfectly go through the system versus no, my identity is in God. My identity is in Christ. Mm-hmm. And like on paper or just flippantly, they can sound like the same thing, right? To somebody that hasn't wrestled through, it's like, well, yeah, God, church, like it's all the same. Yeah. But I do think it's that shift and that figuring out of like, no, our identity is in Christ. And so he made us to question and he made us to think. Yeah. And if he wanted us to just know all these things, he would have created us with this knowledge download of like, now you know what every verse of the Bible means. And now you know all right. the things. And
right.
Like, he wouldn't chose that be not nice? To do that. You know?
Yeah. Our questions, I think, are an invitation. They're not a threat to our relationship with him. Our questions and our doubts and our curiosity about him is a part of the mystery of Christ and the mystery of our faith. And every question is an invitation to know him deeper. And when you step those questions and the things that you're exploring down, you kind of prevent yourself from discovering new truths about who God is and who he is in relation to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're writing, Kristen, it lives in a important but a really hard place. Where I think it's hard to write from, it's hard to speak from. You basically live in this intersection of like faith and uncertainty, kind of like you were just talking about.
Right. Yeah.
So tell me, how did you find your voice there and kind of make this your place, your platform to teach from?
Giving up my death grip on my certainty really opened up the door to be able to write honestly. I can't write and I can't speak in a way that isn't true to me. Yeah. I've never been really good at curating my words or making them mean something that they don't or hiding meaning in them. I'm a very direct type of writer, and being in the places that I've been in my own faith and having a public platform to write about that, it's really challenging because it's really easy to be misunderstood. And a lot of people think that everyone who teaches, everyone who writes a book, everyone who has any kind of influence or platform or is leading a church is certain about everything that they believe. And I have not found that to be true in my own life or in anyone's life, really. I don't think that faith lives in certainty. I think faith lives in, I don't know how things are going to go. I don't know if all of this that I believe is right, but I believe that God's good and I have faith that he's good. I have faith that he's good. I have faith that he's kind. I have faith that he's compassionate. I have faith that he's love. And I don't have to be certain of everything, that every little dotted line in our faith frameworks. I don't think you have to be certain of everything to have a faith that moves you to pursue God and pursue him however he is drawing you in. I think when you think you have to be certain, that can prevent you from taking a step forward. Mm-hmm. And that intersection of belief and uncertainty, faith and I'm not sure, is pursuit. And that's really all that I do, is I bear witness to people's pain and I help them pursue Christ regardless of where they are, and to feel safe pursuing him and not worrying like, ooh, am I doing it wrong? No, if you're seeking, you're going to find him, and it doesn't matter if what it looks like to anyone else.
Yeah. I think too, people think, sometimes they think that they're looking for certainty, but they're really not. And so I think the work that you're doing and the space that you hold for people is really, really important. I remember once I had just preached a message and I was like talking to people afterward, and a guy from church came up, and he's usually like a super sarcastic. I was like, okay, here comes a joke or here comes a thing. And he was like, you just said the most important thing that I've never heard a pastor say, but I think we all need to hear them say. And I was like, what brilliance did God like? What did I? He was like, you said, I don't know about something. And I didn't even remember saying it. It just kind of came out, and I was talking about a scripture, and I must have said like, I don't know exactly what this means, but here's what I think we can take away from it.
Yeah.
And I think that is the perfect picture of what people need to hear. They don't need to know necessarily what you always were certain of was wrong, because here is what is actually certain and true. Like, they need to know that we can say, as teachers and leaders and, you know, whatever, we don't know. And so it gives them permission to also say, I don't know. And it's okay. It's nothing to be scared of. It doesn't mean we're doing anything wrong.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So you put out, look at this little book baby I have right here. So exciting.
It's so pretty. Called,
it's so pretty. Even if he doesn't. And forward by Carlos Whitaker. That is very exciting. Really quick. Tell us your story. I mean, I know it, but tell our listeners how you and Carlos got connected, because that's a really fun little story.
Oh my gosh. We got connected. Man, I think it was in 2020, and I followed Carlos forever back right. when he was Ragamuffin Gospel and uh-huh. was a worship pastor, and I've kind of followed his whole trajectory of his life. And then he followed me back sometime in 2020, and we just sort of became like Instagram friends. Yeah. And then when our pregnancy went crisis, he was following it really closely and checking in with me. And there was one day when the doctors told me we were going to have to deliver on Monday. It was like Saturday. We're gonna have to deliver on Monday. And they were only 24 weeks. And I was so tired. I was so exhausted. And people have been asking me for my Venmo, and I was so tired of being big about it. And like, ugh, no, I don't need a Venmo. Like, I'm yeah, fine. Yeah. Just pray for me. Right? And I was like, you know what? Here's my Venmo. I don't care. Like, I'm done. I just thank you. Yeah. I can't answer these DMs. I don't know yeah. what I'm getting. My life is falling yeah. apart. And I'm sitting there on my bed in our RV because we were traveling the country
at
the time.
You guys lived in your RV at the time.
We did. Yes. And we had just parked it in yes. Massachusetts because we were trying to find a place to live. So I'm sitting there in yeah. my RV bed, and all these Venmo notifications start coming in, and they all say hope in the little caption. Hope, 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 hope. And I was like, what did Carlos do? Because that's kind of like his little tagline. And so I got on Instagram and saw that he had shared with his hundreds of thousands of followers, and his Insta Familia gave us $50,000 in 24 hours.
That's amazing.
Crazy, crazy. And he's been such a good friend, such a good supporter. And when I asked him to forward the book, I was like, you don't have to. And he was like, the answer is obviously yes.
Oh, that's awesome. That's
yeah,
so
he's great.
Isn't that how we approach people too with things? We're like, hey, I would so love for you to do this, but if you don't want to, it's okay.
It's okay.
No pressure.
I have
no
to
pressure.
Learn. I know. I'm trying to learn to stop giving people outs. Like, you can say no, and that's okay, but I'm not going to give you the out.
Thing. I do the exact same thing. All right. So your book is called Even If He Doesn't, mm-hmm. What We Believe About God When Life Doesn't Make Sense. So just share with us a little bit about your heart for this book and what you wrote about it.
Yeah. So I wanted to write a book that approached suffering, the topic of suffering, because there's like a million books about everyone. Every good Christian writes about suffering at some point, I feel like. But I wanted to write about suffering in a more nuanced way, in a more open way. And going through crisis of any kind can really rattle your faith. And especially if you have a formulaic faith where you're like, if I do these things, uh-huh. then God will protect me and he'll bless me and everything will be okay. And then you go through something where the formula doesn't fit and your faith can fall apart. So I wanted to try to write a book that addresses that and addresses how we try to find our purpose in suffering. We try to find the reason for it. We try to make it worth something. And in that, when we do that, what we're doing is trying to seek comfort in the whys of suffering. And if we can explain it, if we can make sense, then it'll be worth something. Then there's comfort in that. But the reality is there's no comfort in that. Even if you get an answer, which when do we ever get answers for why things
happen? For the big
things.
Right.
Right. Even if you get those answers, there's not really comfort in that. And those answers often open up even more questions. So I wanted to write something that approaches suffering in a way that says, look, this is what suffering is. This is what happens. Instead of trying to figure out why it happens or how to turn it into something good. And instead of holding on to your formulaic frameworks and these beliefs that you think are going to protect you from hard things, engage with your pain, engage with your beliefs. And instead of seeking comfort in the solutions or the reasons, mm-hmm. seek comfort in the presence of God, because he is so good and so faithful and so present with us, regardless of our circumstances. But it's when we're trying to look for the explanations or trying to earn our way out of our suffering or earn our way to prevent suffering that we miss the goodness and presence of God all around us.
Yeah, well, we get stuck in back into like the legalism of it all, right? That's when we get stuck in the religion of like, if only I had prayed more, or if I do pray more, then nothing else will happen again. So your book is not going to tell people just everything happens for a reason. God's right.
No, the opposite of that, actually.
Thank you, Kristen, for that, actually.
No, I do a lot of, in the book, there are, at the end of each chapter, there's a distortion and then there's a shift. And the distortion is that kind of stuff. Like, if I can prevent suffering from happening, or suffering is proof that I'm in the will of God. All these little theological snacks or tropes that we hold on to that don't actually hold up when we're suffering, we can look at other people and say, oh yeah, that applies to them, because we assume a lot about what other people have done and why they're suffering. But when it comes to us, it doesn't really satisfy and it doesn't really offer an explanation. So I take each one of those, the things that I thought are like the most common distortions that we have in our framework of suffering, and shifted those into a better way of thinking about it.
I love it. I love it. That's one of my favorite things, actually, is that whole perspective shift of like, hey, here's this Christianese language that spiritual band-aids, I like to call them, you know, it's like a platitude somebody will just slap on and be like, here you go. This is so great. Or like, not only did that not help, it somehow made me feel worse. Your quote unquote encouragement is leaving me feeling worse off, and like, somehow this is my fault.
Yeah. I always say it's like cutting someone open and saying, okay, now fix yourself.
Right.
Why did you do that?
Pray that this gets better. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So does your book, because it talks about, you know, when life doesn't make sense and when things happen, does this seek to answer the question, why does God let bad things happen?
No. Okay. I don't address that question at all, because I don't think it's answerable, really. Yeah. I mean, you can try, but you're just making your best guess. I don't think we can know. Not on this earth, not on this plane of existence anyway. Yeah. But the book is, it's really just about engaging with your pain and with your doubts and learning how to understand God and understand who God is in relation to your suffering and where he is when you're suffering, and how to care for other people as Christ bearers, as people who bear the image of Christ. How do we care for people who are suffering in a compassionate, Christ-like way?
Yeah. What was the hardest part? Was there anything that struck you when you were writing this that you were like, okay, I did not expect this chapter or this section to trip me up, but it kind of did. Was there anything that stood out to you when you were writing it?
I wasn't expecting it to be so emotionally exhausting, because I do share a lot of stories, a lot of my traumas, and a lot of the story of my crisis pregnancy is woven throughout the book. Yeah. And there were days where I would write for a couple hours and then I would sleep the rest of the day, because I hadn't actually sat down and wrote all of those things yet. Yeah. And you kind of have to relive it as you're writing. And then there was just certain things that would come up as I would start writing about some theology or some, you know, way of thinking. And then I'd have to sit back and go, okay, I don't know if I've actually thought this all the way through. And I'm like processing it as I'm writing it. And so there were a few things that I had to sit and say, okay, am I just saying this because this is just hardwired into me, or do I really believe this? So as I was writing, I was still going through that process of critically thinking about what I'm saying and making sure that it aligns with who I am and what I actually believe. Why do I actually believe it? So the book was just a journey, a spiritual and emotional journey of all sorts. I'm so proud of it, because it was such a good experience for me to write the book. And I think it sounds like it's going to be a heavy book, but it's not. It's not one of those books that you're going to need to like decompress from after. There's humor in it, and it's kind of it's the lightest book on suffering that I could possibly write.
Yes. No, it's beautifully written. It's really easy to read. I definitely recommend people grab this, pick it up. We'll link it up in the show notes along with your Instagram so people can follow along and all of that. The last question I want to ask you, Kristen, because the podcast is called Becoming Church, and we really want to equip people to become the church, you know, the church that Jesus called us to the people around them.
Yeah.
Thinking specifically, not about those who are grieving themselves, people that might pick your book up and find some solace in it, but for people who are not themselves going through grief, but they're connected to someone who is, how can they be the church to people who find themselves in a hard time?
The best thing that you can do for anyone who's going through any kind of crisis on any scale is to bear witness to it. And I write in the book about Job's friends and how they kind of get a bad rap for all of the dumb things that they said, but focus on the first part of what they did. They showed up for their friend and they sat with him for 7 days and didn't say anything, and they just grieved with them. I think they earned the right to speak to his pain because they sat and grieved with him. They said dumb things afterwards, but they earned the right to speak to his pain because they sat and grieved with him. And I think that's the best thing that you can do, is not try to advise someone out of their pain, not try to spiritually pat them better, just feed them Sit with them, look at their pain. Don't be intimidated by it. Don't be scared of it. And don't be afraid of where their pain is going to take them. You can be such a crucial part in someone processing their pain and moving past it by just showing up in a non-anxious way, a non-panicked way, and being present, looking at their pain in the face, giving them a casserole, and helping them move through this process, because it's really brutal on them. And the best thing you can do is just be with them in it.
Yeah. I think a lot of times we get tripped up or let our, again, not knowing what to say, we let that stop us, right?
Yeah.
When really like just being there, sitting there, bringing over a box of Kleenex, giving them permission to cry or cuss or whatever it is that they want to do, honestly, like is the most healing thing probably in that moment. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here, Kristen. I know that this book is going to help people. It's going to really speak to some people's stories. So thank you for your work and thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
If you're unsure how to approach God, even as you're struggling to believe in his goodness, I want to encourage you to keep leaning in. If you're a reader, Kristen's book, Even If He Doesn't, might be a great start for you. I've also linked up some past episodes and messages on doubt, grief, and what to do with a changing faith below for you to watch or listen to. If you're looking for a church that doesn't claim to have all the answers and believes in the mystery of a God who's so much greater than we could ever imagine, we would love to have you join us at Mosaic. We even encourage you to stalk us online first at mosaicchurch.tv or on our social media at mosaicclt. I'd love for you to rate and review this podcast to help us grow and share this ministry with other people who need to know there's a different kind of church out there. So thank you in advance for doing that. And until next time, keep becoming church to those around you.